Mountain.
Hi, Joni.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Catholic Traveler podcast. And I almost said the daily podcast where we take you.
No.
That's not. But welcome back to the Catholic Traveler podcast.
I wonder if people forgot about us.
Joni and Mountain. I hope not.
It has been
a whole week.
I feel like I've forgotten about us. Because going from daily to weekly, I don't know. It feels like...
I know.
It's been forever.
It's been a long time since we talked.
It's been forever.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they didn't. Hopefully they've been counting the days until Thursday.
Let's hope.
Yeah. So, well, welcome back, listeners.
Yeah, welcome back, everyone. Welcome back, Joni. It's good to see you again.
Welcome back, Mountain. It's good to see you.
I haven't gone anywhere.
We're in the same spot.
Well, today it's Thursday. We're actually recording even later than usual because...
Yeah.
Because it's been a busy week.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard sometimes to organize our schedules and the time zones. Time zones are very inconvenient.
Yeah, so we're actually...
I mean, they're necessary, but inconvenient.
Yeah, so this episode, we're actually recording usually... We usually already have it posted by this point.
Yes.
It's 2 o'clock in Rome on Thursday.
Yeah. Sorry, Rome listeners.
And where are you?
I'm in Nashville.
It's 2 o'clock.
Central.
No, it's 2 o'clock for me. What?
Ugh. You don't even know what time it is.
No. What time is it for you?
No. 7 a.m.
Oh.
So we'll get this out so that, you know. Yeah, I woke up early.
Good.
So we'll get it out so people can still maybe listen to it before lunch.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I had an interview this morning with Catholic News Service. That was a TV interview. Well, not TV.
It's
they're
exciting.
They're not on TV. Internet.
No, they're
on, but internet video. Internet video interview. Yeah. So we were talking about like people coming back to Rome and what that's going to look like. And of course, nobody knows. But I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about that today. Like, what travel is going to be like? Because places are starting to talk about reopening. It's been over a year since anyone's been able to travel for like leisure reasons. So yeah, they were asking me questions about it and other people have been asking me and I'm just kind of going through my head, like, what's it going to look like?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we joked before we started recording and you said, what would you like it to be like? And I said, normal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I would like it just to go back to where it was, but I think it's impractical. It's not to think that that's going to happen overnight. I mean, for many reasons, but you know, there's some things about travel that I hated that now I even miss that. You know, I joked about buffets and crowded buses, but you know, that was travel to me. And so it's weird to think I won't even have that. But maybe it'll be nice not to have those things for a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be different. But, you know, I mentioned the other day on some social media things that Israel's planning to reopen next month, like the middle of May. And so it just kind of hit me like things are going to start happening soon. But for Israel, you know, you have to have the vaccine before you can go. They're only open to groups. You have to be vaccinated. You have to prove that you're vaccinated. You have to pass a test before you leave, pass another one of those nasal tests when you land. And then the other thing they're planning to do is a blood test to prove that the vaccination certificate is not faked. Apparently, some people were doing that. Some like Israelis, they were in New York and they got fake vaccination certificates. And so the government... I guess there's a blood test they can do to make sure. And so I don't think that's going to appeal to everyone.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and if Israel's doing it, are other people going to follow? And I don't really think it's sustainable anyway. I mean, you've traveled to Tel Aviv and the security there is tight. Like takes forever to go through. They ask you a bunch of questions. And if you're adding like a nasal swab and a blood test on top of that, like that would take hours.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see how it goes and if they can sustain it. And if people aren't coming, like I think sometimes they just assume like we're so ready to travel that we're willing to do all that. But what if people aren't? And then they suffer another tourist season without tourists. Are they going to be able to sustain these things? It's already really difficult to travel through that security. Like that always gives me a stomach ache. And it's going to be even worse if they're going to do all this. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm kind of in that wait and see mode, which I can be because right now my livelihood doesn't depend on it. But I'm ready to travel. And so it was really disappointing for me to hear those all of that because I was ready to buy a ticket as soon as it opened up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. And I was thinking about it, but for me to go, well, I haven't had a vaccine. I live in Italy and we're only doing like 80-year-olds at this point. So even if I was trying to get it here, it'd be like next year before I'm eligible. But they're only opening, it seems like, to Americans, like to start. So I would have to like go to America, then fly from America to Israel and then back to America from Israel and just a headache.
Yeah.
So
I also wonder, and I don't know anything about this, but the vaccines like here, Johnson & Johnson, over there, AstraZeneca, what happens if you've gotten a vaccine that is no longer approved? I guess the blood test would show if you have the antibodies, but, you know, as we're kind of learning about the vaccines and, you know, I guess it's not that the Johnson & Johnson didn't work. It was that it caused blood clots, but that's another thing. Like, I feel like we're all guinea pigs, part of this big test, and it just kind of gives me pause.
And I mean, I understand why they're going through all this trouble because they're kind of the first country to reopen and they're just trying to be, I mean, Israel's always very thorough on anything like crossing borders or whatever. So I get that they're doing all they can to make sure that no one's lying and to protect their country, but it's big headache.
I was just gonna say all eyes are gonna be on how this goes, you know,
and there'll definitely be people that do it. I've had several people say to me they're ready, they'll do whatever, and but those people are going to run out eventually, and then there's going to be the people that aren't comfortable giving blood to a foreign country.
And regardless, like once you think beyond getting to the foreign country, what is touring going to look like? You know, are you going to be restricted on the number of people on the bus? You know, even your personal bus? Are social distancing going to be required? You know, when you go to Israel, I mentioned buffets earlier. I've never eaten at a buffet with Mountain in Italy. I'll tell you that right now, because that needs to be clear. That is not how we eat in Italy, because that's not, you know, the Italian way. But when you do go, when you go to Israel, a lot of your meals are at the hotel and there are buffet meals. And so what does that look like? So just like really practical things, once you get in the country, traveling around the country is going to look differently, I would think. You know, what's going to be imposed by the different churches you visit? Is there, you know, ticketed entry? You know, there's just a lot of questions.
Yeah. In Israel, they're planning to drop their mask mandate. I think it's either this week or next week. So, but then even like with people, I mean, there might be people that are comfortable traveling, but then when they get to Israel, maybe they like the security of a mask, and then they're going to be on a bus with 30, 40 people. Maybe some of those people don't want to wear masks. And is that going to be awkward? Like for me, for like a, from a tour company standpoint, I'll have to let people know that we'll follow the local laws. And if you don't like it, you know, maybe now is not the time to travel. Because here in Italy, I mean, we're not open to tourists, but masks are required just walking down the street alone. So yeah, not everybody's going to be into that sort of thing. So yeah. And then restaurants, are they going to be able to open full capacity? Are they going to be able to accommodate groups? Like our groups are usually smaller, 20 something people, but there are some groups that are 50 people. Are they going to be able to eat? Like, how's that going to work?
I just have a lot of questions. I mean, people have asked me, you know, when are you going back to, when are you traveling again? When are you going back to Rome? And I was like, Mountain can't even go to Assisi right now. I'm not even thinking about, you know, yeah. But when that time comes, what is it going to look like? Because I'm ready to buy my ticket, but I haven't been vaccinated. So, and is that anybody's business too? You know, I'm reluctant to, you know, I think HIPAA laws went out the window, but you know, I get nervous about, you know, people just flat out asking, like, have you been vaccinated? And yeah, it's just difficult. It's a really difficult issue to navigate.
Yeah. And yeah, every country is going to be different. That's the thing about Europe too, is that we're part of the European Union. So if Germany wants to do things one way, but Italy doesn't, how does that work? Because you can cross the border just without any kind of checks currently. Well, not right now, but normal times. So yeah, I'm really curious to see how it goes with Israel reopening, how many people are willing to go through all of this. And then the word is here in Rome, they're going to start reopening some things in May. So restaurants can start serving lunch again to like where we can sit down. But we still have to follow the distancing things. So more tables outside, fewer tables inside. And then after that, they've been talking about they'll start allowing Italians to travel around the country more. And then finally opening up to Europeans. And then once that's going well, then Americans. And I don't know how fast that timeline will be. Some are saying maybe by the end of the summer, open to Americans.
Yeah.
Some are saying, like, I've heard some people say, like, it's probably going to be, like, late June. I think that's too early, considering, like you said, I can't even, like, leave Rome right now. Right. To go from that to, like, busloads of Americans coming back.
Right. It's just not, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And then, like, museums are going to have to, how are they going to do that? Put a cap on it? Because we've talked before about the Vatican museums, 30,000 people a day. And that's uncomfortable, like when you're not worrying about pandemics.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why some of this will be kind of nice. You know, I would love to go to Rome right now because I would love to experience it and really enjoy it without the crush of people. And so that's why it's kind of bittersweet. But I want the crush of people back because I want us to be able to travel.
Yeah. I think it'll be a while before there's a crush of people. I think right when things start to open, there's going to be the people that have just been ready to go. They're going to come over, but there's still a lot of people that are afraid that it'll take them a while to want to sit on an airplane for 8 or 9 hours and then be in different hotels a couple times and on a bus with people. So I think it'll be a while before like just casual travel is back.
Yeah.
Pilgrimage travel though, I think that will come back quicker than casual travel because it's kind of travel with a higher purpose and people are probably ready to visit the saints or see the Pope or, you know, just come to Rome or the Holy Land. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Like next Lent for our Station Church pilgrimage.
Yeah. We already talked about that, right? A little bit.
I don't think we've never formally, just kind of joked about it on the podcast. So I'm just throwing it out there that we would love to do a Station Church. We planned like 4 pilgrimages during our Station Church podcasts, but jokingly, but I did get a little ad from, well, my friend got an ad and she sent it to me for working remotely from Aruba, that Aruba said, we're open for business. Why don't you come work remotely while you have to work remotely in your house? Why don't you work remotely from Aruba? So, you know, maybe we could do a pilgrimage to Aruba.
Have you been to Aruba?
I have not.
I have.
Oh, there you go. Should we do a pilgrimage to Aruba?
I loved it. There were some really pretty churches there and the weather was perfect.
It's there we go.
Very windy. And what I wasn't expecting when I went was there are iguanas everywhere, like in the wild. So we were sitting at a table outside, like having a coffee or something and you're making a face. And then you feel something at like your foot and you look down.
Nope.
It's like a 4-foot iguana or something.
Oh my gosh.
Or they're like climbing up a tree right beside you while you're eating. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe not the pilgrimage.
Maybe not Aruba.
Yeah.
But it's really pretty.
But I was going to say, if people are interested, they should DM us.
Sign up for the Aruba pilgrimage.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm going to shamelessly talk about Pope Benedict briefly because this is the anniversary of his election this week. I have been saving money for Pope Benedict's funeral, and I have been saving money to go to his funeral because I was there at his election. And when I was at his election, well, I wasn't like in the Sistine Chapel. I was in the square. I was with the president of my college at the time had studied in Rome when John Paul II was elected. And so he had told his wife, when John Paul II dies, we're coming back for his funeral. And he did. He flew over like the night before the funeral. So that inspired me. So I was like, I was here for Benedict's election. I'm going to be here for his funeral. So I've been saving money since then for his funeral, expecting it to be this big papal funeral. Well, who knows if that's going to be the case because he's not Pope anymore. But now there's this pandemic. And so I'm like praying that he stays alive so that I can come for his funeral. So it was I've been thinking about it this week because it's the anniversary of his election. I'm like, I never thought that a worldwide pandemic, because everyone's like, what would stop you from going? I'm like, nothing would stop me from being at his funeral. And now I'm like, wait, even if I could get over there during the pandemic, his funeral will probably be a private mass, and it's really sad, but I'll get there somehow. So I'm just throwing that out there. But it's interesting how much we took for granted before this. And I know we've said this a million times, people are always talking about this, how much you took for granted before, but things like travel and buffets and crowded buses, you know, just to think that those might not come back for a while is really weird. And just to think we can't just hop over to Rome, it's still taking me a while to get used to that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
somebody asked me yesterday where I would go tomorrow if I could travel. And I was like, Rome. Oh. I miss Rome. I have to go back to Rome.
Yeah, I've been thinking too a lot about like if Benedict died or even if Francis died, like what that would look like now, because papal funerals are, I mean, I've only lived through one, I guess. No, I guess John Paul I was alive for that maybe. But John Paul II, I mean, there was, what, a million people in Rome?
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine like how, and I mean, a lot of people have had to have horrible funerals during the pandemic,
but definitely
like a papal funeral that's just at the altar of the chair and there's like 100 people there maybe, that would be really strange. And then a conclave, like what if a conclave happened during
I remember thinking about that during the lockdown, and canon lawyers kind of talked about what would happen and who could get over there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now we've seen cardinals. We saw cardinals go over for the consistory and, you know, so cardinals can get to Rome. But it is still really weird that, we just became such a mobile society. Mm-hmm. You know, even with, like you said, John Paul I's funeral, there weren't a million people. Like, partly because, you know, he had been Pope for 30 days, but partly because, you know, we weren't as much of a mobile society. We became such an international travel society that I think this pandemic really affected us in ways maybe the other 20s, right? Something happens every 20, you know, didn't affect us as much because we have become such an international travel. We just became very mobile, you know? Yeah. And all of a sudden we aren't.
Yeah, there were people that would make a trip over to Rome for like 5 days.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Whereas before you would go on like kind of an international trip, like a European tour and, you know.
Yeah. Take the cruise
and take
over
your time. Rome. Yeah. But I mean, I had a friend who went to Rome for the weekend once because tickets were really cheap and they just hopped over. That would be unthinkable, you know, 100 years ago. So we became very used to travel, and that was taken away. So it'll be weird to see when it comes back what that looks like.
Yeah. And for airlines too, like it's probably going to be a while before they have like the regular routes again.
Yeah.
People are going to deal with more connections.
Yuck.
So
even hotels, like what hotels in Rome, for example, aren't going to make it through this. I mean, I hate to think about that. I hate to think about the restaurants, but it's inevitable, right? So what happens when the city itself can't sustain the same amount of tourists right away?
Some of the big pilgrimage hotels here in Rome, when people start coming back, are they going to open for like 10 people when usually they hold hundreds?
Yeah.
So maybe that's the an advantage that the smaller hotels will have. Like Airbnbs, they're gone in Rome. Like yeah, so many, I mean, I'm sure they'll come back, but so many now, because I'm always looking at apartment listings, even though I'm happy with my apartment, I just like to see what's out there. And on my street, there are so many that are now being rented out kind of short term, like 6 months to a year. But I guess people are going to be going back to hotels for a while and
yeah,
not living on their own.
It's different. I don't know. I don't know whether this is making me excited to come back or depressed. I can't decide.
Well, I think it's both. But I think it's kind of a reality yeah, thing. Like things are going to start opening up soon, but what's it going to look like? It's going to be different, but it can be a good different and a bad different. I mean, it's,
yes,
it'll be great to have things to yourself, not waiting in huge lines for a while. But at the same time, there might be a little sadness, like, oh, it's nice seeing the Trevi Fountain empty, but it's kind of fun when it's shoulder to shoulder and you hear all these different languages. Like I heard, I was in St. Peter's Square earlier and I heard English, like three girls speaking English. And like, I almost got whiplash, like looking around so fast. I was like, what is that?
Because like college kids room.
Yeah. It's so rare to hear other languages. It's like everything's Italian now. Yeah. So that will be exciting to hear a bunch of other languages again. And my street is dead silent at night. So I'm looking forward to a little life coming back.
The accordion player. You're looking forward to the accordion player.
Well, do you remember like over the summer, they came back for a couple weeks?
Yes. Yes.
And I was like, I was in my living room and I heard like the accordion. I was like, that can't be. And
that's right.
I like got all excited and looked out the window and he was there. And I was like, yes. Usually I'm like, no to the accordion. Yeah. He plays like the same songs over and over and over. Yeah. What is he? He plays like that Despacito song. Is that what it's called? Like,
oh yeah. From what's
Justin
face?
Bieber. And
yeah.
Yeah. Like that's what the accordion players play over and over and over.
That's annoying.
But it will be nice to hear that again. Yeah. Not that song, but just some noise.
I was looking through emails yesterday, old emails, and I found an email from March 4th, 2020, where I was advertising our France pilgrimage. And I was like, this is one for the bucket list. And I was all like giving people like a sneak peek that who've traveled with me before that, you know, Mountain and I are going to France. And I was like outlining everything we were going to do. And I was like, well, this is depressing.
Yeah.
But March 4th, it was just, and even then it was like, should I be sending this out? Like Europe seems to be closing, but I did anyway. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, world closed. But I had to laugh when I saw, I was like, when did I send this that I was advertising a pilgrimage?
Yeah. So. Well, I was certain that it was only going to be a few months.
I know everybody was like, Joan, you're not going to France in October. And I was like, we might go.
Well, we had people signing up. So they thought so too.
Yeah. So I'm ready to start crafting new itineraries and it'll be fun.
The Lenten pilgrimage.
Yes. So Mountain and I are talking about doing a station church pilgrimage of sorts where we would, you know, go during Lent. So we would hit the station churches of those days, but then also visit some of the other station churches that might fall outside the pilgrimage dates and, you know, help show you in person what we talked about. Mm-hmm. For the past 40 days. Yeah. So I'm excited for that.
I am too. And I've gotten already quite a few people asking me about it.
Good.
So we should try to pick our dates and get that going.
Yes.
Because surely by next spring.
Surely, right? Well, surely we'll plan it. Open. And if it works, it works.
Yeah.
People are getting antsy. People are getting weird. You know, I think people are just intrigued by what's going to happen. And
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It'll, especially like being here, it'll be interesting to see like what it looks like compared to like if you're in America watching it, maybe.
Yeah.
To see like how big groups are. Like I've seen the last few days a few Italian groups because they're all exploring Italy now.
But I thought you couldn't travel from region to region.
So they're Rome groups. So oh, it's people okay. in Rome.
Okay.
I think we've talked about it before. Like Romans haven't that's really true. Seen their city.
Yeah, that's and true. So I mean, it's like some days I play tourist in Nashville and yeah. I'm like, you know what? I've never seen such and such. And so I'll play a tourist and go. So often you don't appreciate your own city when you're living in it. I mean, I still think about, what was it, a year and a half ago when we were in Rome and we took you took Paolo to the Sistine Chapel. Mm-hmm. So Mountain has a good friend, Paolo, who has owned one of the hotels we stayed at and has been really good to Mountain's family. And so we were going to Vespers at the Sistine Chapel for Advent, and Mountain had a few tickets, and he asked Paolo if he wanted to go. And Paolo lives literally across the street from the Vatican Museums, and had not been in the Sistine Chapel since it had been restored. And one of the most moving moments, I mean, that pilgrimage was full of moving moments, but to see Paolo's face when he walked into the Sistine Chapel, it just like he had never seen it restored. He'd only seen it dirty. And if you've seen pictures mm-hmm. of the Sistine Chapel before it was restored, it looked nothing like what it looks like today. And it was so beautiful to see his wonder and awe. And I thought, how can we all have the same wonder at awe at yeah. things that we take for granted? But yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was a great moment.
Seeing the look on his face, and he was taking pictures. He doesn't take pictures of anything, but
yeah,
he was just so happy yeah. to be there.
And it was something across the street from his house.
Yeah. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, but Amelia has a friend that lives almost right across from the Vatican Museums. And she's, I guess, 16, 17 or something. And she had never been. Like, I would think that yeah. that would be part of like a school field trip or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, yeah. a 16, 17-year-old kid had never been because
yeah,
it's too crowded.
Yeah, 30,000 people. Who wants to do that? And you think, oh, well, I'll do it later. You know, yeah. I'll do it another day. I'll do it another day when it's, well, time to do it because it opens back up in May and crowds will be light. So Romans will go to the Vatican Museums.
Right. And then hopefully Americans will follow soon after.
Hopefully.
But not for a funeral. I don't want that to happen
no,
soon.
I know. But I'm going to figure out a way to get over there if it does. So we'll see.
We'll get you here. Yeah. You just might be watching it on your computer like everyone else.
But in Rome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'll figure out a way to get into the private mass.
Oh.
No, I won't. Just kidding. But if we have anybody listening who could work that out for me, let me know.
Go talk to my neighbor.
Yeah. Yes. Your neighbor could get me in.
You could be the English reader.
There you go. I volunteer. Okay. Volunteer to be the English reader. So I have one more story to say, and then, yeah, we can call it. But so Pope Benedict was elected and right after Easter. And as we talked about the station churches, I was doing the station churches every day and was very faithful to try to go to, you know, the station church as much as possible. So one morning, Pope Benedict, as Cardinal Ratzinger, used to say a private mass in the German chapel that's right in the cemetery in Vatican City. And he said it once a week, I believe on Thursday mornings. And so a group of my friends went to his private mass. And I thought, well, I'll go after Easter because I want to go to the station churches. And I was really dedicated to the station churches. So I thought, well, you all go to his private mass right now, but I will go after Easter. So Easter comes and I'm thinking, okay, the Thursday after Easter, I'll go. And I couldn't go the Thursday after Easter. I think maybe he wasn't celebrating mass or something. So I was like, okay, John Paul II dies, the eve of Divine Mercy Sunday, the next Thursday, you know, we're getting ready for a funeral. Then there's a conclave and we're standing in the square, St. Peter's, and we're all kind of betting. That's another story, but we're betting on who's going to become the next pope. And I was like, well, it can't be Cardinal Ratzinger. And everyone's like, why? Because everybody wanted Cardinal Ratzinger. And I said, because I haven't been to mass with him. Like, I missed my chance to go to the private mass. Because after the private mass, he came over to my friends. He knew our college well, Christendom. So we came over, he chatted, he talked about Christendom with them. So I was like, he can't become pope that? Because I missed that for the station churches.
So I knew you missed the mass. I didn't know he came over and like chatted with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. He chatted and yeah. Even when he was Pope, if he saw a group from Christendom, he often would go over and talk to them. So it was just funny because I'm standing in St. Peter's Square not wanting Cardinal Ratzinger to become Pope because I selfishly wanted to go to the private mass with him. And when he came out on the balcony, obviously I forgot that, you know, disappointment. But After that, I wrote him a letter and I delivered it to the Swiss guards at the bronze gate or bronze doors and told them that I'd like to have a private mass with Pope Benedict because I missed my chance. And for years after that, whenever I'd come to Rome, I would write Pope Benedict a letter and say, tell him the story again and ask if I said, I don't need to talk to you. I just want to come to mass with you. And never got to go to that private mass. So I've been to little masses with him, smaller masses, but still holding out for that private mass with Pope Benedict. So anyway, if anybody can make that happen, I'm just throwing it out there. But I missed my chance for the station churches. Hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm sorry, Joni.
It's okay. I'm not bitter. I mean, I still am a little bitter, but only at myself. I'm the one that made that choice.
Right? Yeah.
Why didn't I go to morning mass with Pope Benedict and or Cardinal Ratzinger and then evening mass at the Station Church? Because I didn't think he was going to be Pope after Easter. That's why. So anyway, good times.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Mountain.
Thanks, Joni. Thanks, listeners.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for not forgetting about us.
Yes. Yes. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully you've subscribed. And so this just popped up in your podcast app. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't subscribed, make sure you subscribe, rate, tell your friends about us, and we'll talk to you next Thursday.
Yeah. If not sooner, daily.
Oh, yeah. I think we'd run out of things to talk about.
No. But. All right.
Okay. Ciao, ciao, everyone.
Ciao, people.
Ciao, ciao. Ciao, tutti. Ciao, ciao.